Welcome to Blog Talk Radio in high fidelity.
The Senate will come to order.
Are you ready?
Yeah!
I want to know, is everybody ready?
Yeah!
All right, here we go. Everybody, get on up and do your stuff. Did you hear what I say? I said everybody, get on up and do your stuff. You better get up. You got to be tough when you do your stuff.
Hey,
everybody. Welcome to Congress College. My name is Elizabeth Christ, and I want to thank you in advance for spending 30 minutes of your time this week to listen to Congress College. That means that presumably you want to know what's going on in Congress. You want to know what's going on with your representatives in the House and the Senate. Again, my name is Elizabeth Christ. Welcome to Congress College, where we talk about Congress twice weekly. On the Monday show, this is when Congress is in session, we typically outline the week. And what that means is we talk about literally what bills will be coming up in the Senate of the United States and in the House of Representatives. And then on the Friday show, which of course is this show, the same time slot, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, this is when we recap the week and we talk about what actually got done. What did the House of Representatives end up passing or debating? What did the Senate of the United States end up doing? You know, I do Congress College twice weekly to familiarize folks with their representatives. I want them to know what is going on, just even if it's on a peripheral way. If they just want the 30,000 foot, you know, description, what's going on in Washington, D.C. with their representatives? Because I say this all the time, we have the greatest representative government in the world. Yes, we've got warts. Yes, we've got problems. But we do. We have the greatest representative government in the world. I always challenge people, which is better? Do you think China might have a better government? Maybe Germany has a better form of government. I'll argue that any day, folks. I really will. So I can convince you, I think, that we have the greatest representative government, but it's only at its best. It's only working at its peak performance when you and I are involved, when we know what's going on in Washington. Are those guys and gals in the House of Representatives and in the Senate, are they representing you and me well? Are they speaking for us? That's what representative government is supposed to be about. We're supposed to stay home and raise our children and work on our businesses and go to work every day and have Washington, D.C. representatives speaking for us. But I like to believe we need to know what they're up to. So that's one of the reasons I do this show. Another reason is to familiarize folks with the free website, gradegov.com. And of course, gradegov.com lets you grade a member of Congress. How about your member of Congress? You want to give them an A? Maybe you want to give them an F. And of course, the grades we're talking about are just like the grades we got in school, the A, B, C, D, or F. Once you figure out who you want to grade, and then once you figure out what grade you want to give them, the site will prompt you to write a letter explaining your grade. It auto prompts all the way up to Dear Senator, let's say Rubio. Dear Senator Rubio, I gave you a C today. And then you finish the rest of the letter. I always urge folks to check your spelling because I am a horrible speller. And then once you click send, you've just graded and written a letter to a member of Congress and they see them, folks. Members of Congress see their grade. They figure out what you think of them because they go to GradeGov all the time. But more importantly, your grade and your letter get to the representative's inbox. It gets to somebody in their office in Washington, D.C. The reason why it's so successful in doing that is because GradeGov.com does not use the House or the Senate automated email system. That's just a reporting system, folks. So tell your friends, tell your family about gradegov.com. I would greatly, greatly appreciate it. And then let's get started. All right, we're going to start this week. We're going to start this Friday. We're going to start talking about the Senate of the United States because they are starting the continuing resolution. What is the continuing resolution? I talked about this on Andrea Shea King's show this week. That's the funding of the federal government past our fiscal year, which ends September 30. So the federal government needs money after September 30. It needs money for every single agency, every single department, everything that it does. It needs money. It's out of money. Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, has been trying to pass the individual 12 appropriations bills all summer with some success. And then it ends up going to the Senate of the United States. And Harry Reid, still the minority leader, still has power, still around until January of next year, January 3rd, actually. He uses his membership, his 40-some members of the Senate, he uses them to block. To block the debate on the Senate floor. So they don't ever really end up doing the bills. So here you go. The Senate of the United States is going to start doing the continuing resolution. This is what they want in the continuing resolution. They want the funding at last year's level. The funding is just going to go till middle December so that when they come back off their election, they can really hone down on how they want to fund the federal government. It would prevent, though, Planned Parenthood clinics in Puerto Rico from receiving Zika money. The Democrats are going crazy over that. They also want to include a provision that would delay the plans for the U.S. government to give control over our internet. Have you heard about this? The overseeing of our internet domains right now is run out of California. They want to give this system to a system, I believe, in Russia. So they want to scale back that. And they basically want to give the control of our internet domains to it's sort of like a council. It's sort of like a committee, an overseas committee. And there's some pesticide regulations they want to stop. But here's the biggie. They want to slow down the flow of refugees from Syria and Iraq. So this is going to be a big deal. I want to play a clip about how it looks like the White House is going to handle this. This is a little more than 3 minutes. Here you go.
I'm John Bennett, Roll Call's White House correspondent. This week, the highlight for President Obama was a Tuesday campaign event for Hillary Clinton. Now, the Democratic nominee for president was not in Philadelphia with President Obama. She was still recovering from pneumonia. But the president really defended his own record at the top of that event.
We fought our way back from the worst recession in 80 years. We turned around a declining economy. We helped our auto industry set new records. Our businesses created 15 million new jobs, slashed our dependence on foreign oil, doubled our production of clean energy, made marriage equality a reality in all 50 states.
And with his approval ratings steadily above 50%, even a year ago, it really wouldn't seem like this president would be out there defending his record and urging Democrats and undecideds to go out in big numbers and vote for Hillary Clinton and Democratic candidates to continue his record. Next week, the president heads to New York for the UN General Assembly. It will be his last General Assembly. It's not a victory lap. It's important to note that. Maybe a year or so ago, one would have expected Obama to go to New York and kind of take a victory lap. But with Syria hanging over his presidency and what happens long after he's gone, really can't do that. Expect the president to press more countries to do more with the refugee crisis that is directly a result, many say, of his policy, or they, especially Republican lawmakers say, his lack of a policy. As he's in New York, he and his staff will have to monitor talks toward a stopgap spending measure back here in Washington that were not completed this week. That's going to go into next week. The White House is going to have to sign off, obviously, on whatever lawmakers come up with. We'll see if that continues. The White House has gotten more forceful as past negotiations went on. Obama faces what could be a politically tricky timing-wise at least, veto of the so-called 9/11 Families Bill. It would allow families of terrorism victims to sue foreign governments believed to be linked to those attacks on American soil. The White House argues what the bill would create is a patchwork of federal judges deciding if those links even exist. And they say the president will veto the bill. And that will set up a decision for Speaker Paul Ryan and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on when or if they schedule override votes. It looks like the White House's play here is to maybe try to push those votes into a lame duck session. And one thing to keep in mind here, Speaker Ryan was more on the White House side when this bill first started to move in the spring. So it's not clear yet when and if those override votes will even occur.
You know, I'm going to differ there for a minute. Speaker Ryan didn't support the White House on the 9/11 Families Bill, and it passed the House of Representatives almost unanimously. So, yes, it probably will be something they do in the lame duck session in December. That's a good thing, folks. That's a good thing because they won't have their restraints or constraints of an election hanging over their head. It's amazing. Let me just say this, in my years in the Senate as the Secretary for the Majority and the other roles, it was amazing how different a lot of members of Congress were during lame duck sessions because they felt like they were a little bit free. I'll just say it that way. Free to vote more their conscience, more how they really felt, more how they really wanted the country to go, as opposed to some political hot button issue that was tying them down. It was sort of liberating in a mild sense. It was sort of liberating. And I don't mean they were being liberated from their constituents. They were being liberated from the political arena, I'll say it that way. Maybe political hot buttons that were stifling them. So if this bill does get vetoed, it sounds like it will, the 9/11 Families Bill, and the veto ends up coming up in December, you'll get a better view, a vote, a purer vote. And we'll have many, many, many times to talk about it. One thing I thought was interesting, the president's on the campaign stumping for Hillary Clinton, and he spends half his time talking about his legacy. Is this narcissistic or what? He literally spent half of his time talking about his legacy. Kind of crazy. All right, let's go over to the House of Representatives. Behind the scenes, they are also looking at trying to figure out the language that'll go in the continuing resolution. And, you know, let's not all get all hot and bothered over the language because, folks, this is only, what, a six-week bill, five-week bill? It's gonna expire first part of December. So I hope bloggers don't go crazy if they say, oh, the funding level didn't get cut. They ended up caving to the White House again. It's a six-week bill, folks. Just remember that. It's a six-week bill. But I'm going to play a little antics that the House of Representatives, some of the Democrats, did again on the House floor. Take a listen. This is a little more than a minute.
Mr. Speaker, I yield to the gentlelady from Florida, Ms. Castor, for the purpose of a unanimous consent request.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent to bring up H.R. 1217, the bipartisan expanded background checks legislation, to honor the memory of Martavius Carn, age 3, a Florida victim of gun violence who never received a moment of action on the House floor.
Once again, the gentleman from Alabama has not consented to the unanimous consent request. It cannot be entertained at this time. Gentleman from Massachusetts.
Mr. Speaker, I yield to the gentlewoman from Connecticut, Ms. Esty, for the purpose of a unanimous consent request.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent to bring up H.R. 1217, the bipartisan expanded background checks legislation, to honor the memory of Frederick Richardson of Bridgeport, Connecticut, a victim of gun violence who never received a moment of action on the House floor.
Mr. Speaker, I am proud to yield to the distinguished gentleman from Georgia, a leader on issues of justice and nonviolence, Mr. Lewis, for the purpose of a unanimous consent request.
Mr. Speaker, I ask unanimous consent to bring up H.R. 1217, the bipartisan expanded background check legislation, in the memory of Billy Talley from Union, Mississippi, a victim of gun violence who never, ever receive a moment of action on the House floor.
Unanimous consent requests cannot be entertained.
You know, they had photos of these victims, and it is sad that people are killed every single day by guns. But the guns aren't killing people. The people are killing people. The Democrats lined up, came to the podium one by one, seeking unanimous consent on a bill that would expand background checks for buying guns. And obviously, the leadership instructed the chair to just say, objection is heard, can't be entertained now. Unanimous consent is just that. Think of the words, unanimous consent. Everybody has to agree. And of course, the leadership did not want to agree. Did that get any play? No, I'm probably the only one that's even bringing it up. It really did not get any play. It's more part of the Democrats trying to make the issue, gun issue, an issue for this election. And it just is not becoming an issue. It just is not. I see Beverly in Kentucky is talking about, yeah, Chicago last weekend. Why isn't Rahm Emanuel screaming up and down? Why isn't he screaming up and down trying to ask for the Justice Department maybe to help him with the police? Gun control obviously is not the answer. So they did a little bit of that this week. Otherwise, you know what happened this week? Mike Pence, the vice presidential candidate for Donald Trump, the former leadership in the House of Representatives, former congressman from Indiana, came over to the House, broke bread with him, went to a House leadership meeting, had a very good meeting, notwithstanding sort of the New York Times, I think was one of them that said it was contentious. And then he went over to the Senate of the United States and had lunch with the Senate Republicans. That was on Tuesday. Great meeting. You know, I mentioned this on Andrea Shea King's show this week, and I've mentioned it before on this show. Back in the Reagan days, back in the Reagan Revolution, when if you remember, the history books say that Reagan and Tip O'Neill were such good friends and he worked so well with Congress. How did he do that? He was just this actor from California. Yeah, he was head of the Screen Actors Guild. But he was also a former governor, but he didn't have a lot of friends in the House. He didn't have a lot of friends in the Senate. How did he do that? He had an emissary. He had a ambassador by the name of Paul Laxalt, Senator Paul Laxalt, the senator from Nevada. Senator Laxalt was a former governor of Nevada. He was governor of Nevada at a time when Ronald Reagan was governor of California. They became BFFs. They became very good friends. Obviously, those two states border each other. So they became very good friends. They actually created sort of Lake Tahoe and it's all of its natural heritage and all of that together, the two governors at the time. They became very good friends. Now, fast forward, Ronald Reagan is now president of the United States. Paul Laxalt is now the senator from Nevada, his eyes and ears in the Senate. That's what he was. He was his eyes and ears. So that when the Senate Republicans would break bread on Tuesday in their policy luncheon, Senator Laxalt was there. I've been to many, 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 many policy luncheons. They're very, very private. The fellowship is coveted because it is so private. Members stand up after eating lunch together at these round tables, six or eight at a table. They stand up and they talk about whatever they need to talk about. My wife is ill. My husband is ill. My child. Or I've got a problem with the bill. Who wants to co-sponsor? Or the Democrats are really fighting me on my piece of legislation. Who can help me? Anybody have any ideas? Or I'm really mad at the White House. I want to fire off a letter. Who wants to join me on the letter? All of that. And if it was about the White House back when Senator Laxalt was in the policy committee, you know what he would do after he had lunch? He would walk himself into the cloakroom, go into a phone booth, dial the president and tell him, hey, you want to solve a problem? You want to win a brownie point? You want to help a fellow Republican senator out? He's got a problem with the White House on whatever. He's got a problem with something you're doing. What great way to sort of earn chits but make friends. Well, Mike Pence is able to do that. He's able to do that with the House of Representatives and in a large sense, the Senate. But you know, Senator Sessions, one of the first senators to endorse Donald Trump, can be that. So together, they can be an amazing Paul Laxalt for Donald Trump, assuming he wins the presidency. And I am so excited to see a president, a new president, work with the House, work with the Senate. In other words, work with us. Remember at the beginning of this show, we have the greatest representative government. The House and the Senate is our voice. When this president, current president, stands up and says, Congress won't do anything, so I have to, that Congress won't do anything. Congress doesn't want to do anything because we don't want them to do anything. That's our voice. I'm so excited that the president of the United States, President Trump, might actually be able to work with the House, might actually be able to work with the Senate. That means working with you and I. That means having our voices heard and actually getting things done. So we're going to keep an eye on that. But that's the House and the Senate. I talked about this. I teased this out as I teased the show. Hillary Clinton's lead is disappearing as fast as her emails. They're disappearing. And so is her lead. She's had a terrible 3 weeks, guys. I mean, a terrible 3 weeks. And this is off the heels of a big bump off for their convention, the Democratic convention. And remember, Hillary Clinton had a record high fundraising August. She raised $140 million in August. Donald Trump raised $90 million. It was a record for him, but $90 million versus $140, and he has cut her lead in half. In some polls, he's leading. I'm going to read a couple of these. These are important because I'm reading state polls. State polls are more important than national polls, because state polls get into the feeling of each person in the state. I take much more credence in state polls. Here's a Franklin and Marshall College poll. This is Pennsylvania. Clinton, 47. Trump, 40. But she led last month by 11 points. Some people say that that poll has actually dropped to 4 points, 43 to 39. So that's Pennsylvania. Think about that. All right. What about this one? This is a poll. This was a mid-August. Real Clear Politics had Hillary up 8 points, and Donald Trump has cut that in half. How about a Fox poll and a Reuters poll showed Donald Trump down only 2 to Hillary? How about a Florida poll? Remember, I prefer state polls. This is a Tallahassee poll. Donald Trump, 42. Hillary Clinton, 39. This is the biggest change since the FBI came out and spent 15 minutes damning her in the news conference, but basically saying, we're not going to do anything with her mishandling the emails. No criminal charges. There is a definite link between Clinton's drop in the polls in Florida, I believe, and her emails, her dishonesty. You know, Trump's questioning her about her moral standards or her honesty is showing up in the polls little by little. How about Los Angeles, California? Who'd have thunk it? The LA Times has a national tracking poll. 6% rise. This is Thursday from July. This is a USC Dorn Snipe LA Times national poll. They see the biggest reason for the likelihood of Donald Trump supporters is because the question the voters most talked about in the poll was her honesty. They didn't like, or they don't feel like, she is being honest. How about Michigan? This is one of the last ones I'm doing. Michigan. Now, this is where in 2012, presidential candidate Mitt Romney tried to use his family connections. Remember, his father had been governor. And I think his father had been head of the American Motors at one point before he served 2 terms as governor, I believe. This was the result of 2012. Romney lost Michigan to President Obama
54 to 45. Guess what it is now? Guess what it is now? You have got Donald Trump, 42, Hillary Clinton, 38. That's in Michigan, folks. And that's probably going to be shown a little bit in the Rust Belt when some of these others. So pay attention to state polls. If you really want to sort of handicap this, sure, the LA Times is but that's a national paper. Washington Post, that's a national paper. New York Times, that's a national paper. Look at college-sponsored polls. Look at smaller papers, not the tiny little hometown papers, but the medium-sized, medium-city, state papers when they do polls. Do yourself a favor. You can handicap a lot better if you do that. All right, I do this every airing of Congress College. Get your paper, get your pencil out. We are fixing to hear the president's daily schedule for today. And, you know, I do this, folks, so that you can really understand the level of work that this president is doing on a daily basis. And I do this because I used to have to check the president's daily schedule often in the Senate, especially when the leadership, and, you know, here's why. The leadership almost always was going down to the White House once a week, once every 2 weeks, sometimes twice a week. So I have to check the president's schedule, try to figure out when was a good time to schedule votes in the Senate, especially if we were in the majority. And I was the secretary for the majority, which was a lot of that was scheduling votes for the leadership. The best time for the best vote, the strongest vote to occur. You don't want to do it when a lot of members are out. You don't want to do it when they're down at the White House. So I got in the habit of checking presidential schedules. I can tell you average what Ronald Reagan, what Bill Clinton, what Daddy Bush, what George W. Bush's schedules look like. And I say this all the time. They start out in the morning with 7:30, 8 o'clock breakfast in maybe the family quarters. In the case of Bill Clinton, he ran in the morning. So a jog, 8:30, 9 o'clock, president receives the presidential daily briefing, a 9:30 to 10 o'clock senior staff meeting, 10 to 10:30, 10:30, 11, meeting with House leadership, meeting with the speaker, 11 to 11:30 or 12, meeting with chairman, on and on all day long till 7 or 8 o'clock at night. This guy, folks, our current president, he is lucky to have three things on his schedule. And a lot of times one of those three things is lunch. Okay, so I've teed it up enough. Do yourself a favor, Google your favorite past president and pick a day, a Friday in September, part of the president's cycle, and just see if it doesn't mirror very similar what I just said. And here is our current president's daily schedule. Drum roll, please. 10:20, the president holds a meeting on trade with business, government, and national security leaders. At 11:45, he receives the president. And at 4 o'clock, he participates in an ambassador credentialing ceremony. Three things, folks. Three things. All right. I hope you have a great weekend. I hope you have a lot of fun stuff planned for the weekend. Thanks to all those in the chat room. John, Beverly, Andrea, everybody have a wonderful, wonderful, blessed week. I played Gloria Gaynor's I Will Survive last week. This Monday, anyway, we are going to survive, folks. We live in the greatest country on earth. Have a great, blessed weekend. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you on Monday.
Kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong. And I grew strong. And I learned